Welcome to the debut podcast. This is Cedric Clark.
And I'm Kojo Mensah-Bonsu.
First things first, here's a simplistic breakdown of the debut acronym. We're going to bring it from a perspective of being D, diverse individuals that have experienced A, athletics at a high level, with a guess what? Successful transition to B, the business world. That leads us to the fact that your potential is actually you, unlimited, if you're willing to put in the work. That's the D-A-B-U debut.
Let's be clear. Our goal here is not to tell you how to think, how to feel, or how to act. But we are obligated to share the truth in correlation to our experiences, which has fueled our perspectives.
So let's not waste time getting into this conversation, Co. Let's get it.
Let's do it.
Oh, God, man. What?
Is this your shortest fight ever? In any time, amateur, professional, ever?
Assalamu alaikum, Maida. I don't know, man. Yeah, Lennox Lewis, I'm coming for you.
And then have this in 7 or 8 seconds.
For this fight, I only trained probably 2 weeks or 3 weeks for this fight. I had to bury my best friend, and I dedicated this fight. I wasn't going to fight. I dedicated this fight to him. I was going to rip his heart out. I'm the best ever. I'm the most brutal and vicious and most ruthless champion there's ever been. There's no one can stop me. Lennox is a conqueror. No, I'm Alexander. He's no Alexander. I'm the best ever. There's never been anybody as ruthless. I'm Sonny Liston. I'm Jack Dempsey. There's no one like me. I'm from Nairclaw. There's no one that can match me. My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable. And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah.
I walk around the ring, but I never take my eyes off my opponent. I keep my eyes on him, even if he's ready and pumping. He can't wait to get his hands on me as well. I keep my eyes on him. Then once I see a chink in his armor, boom, and one of his eyes may move, and then I know I have him. He still looks at me with his piercing look and as if he's not afraid, but he already made that mistake when he looked down for that 1/10 of a second.
Whew. Welcome back, folks.
Yes. Back in.
We'll continue right where we left off.
Yeah, absolutely.
Episode one, masculinity.
Yeah.
So for those of you who haven't listened to episode one on masculinity, we're continuing that session and profiling our subject, which is Mike Tyson. That was some verbiage from him throughout some of his boxing career. And
yeah.
He's been widely recognized as the baddest man on the planet, right? And he speaks about some of the mentality that drove him and what inspired him to fight with the ferociousness and the tenacity that he had, right? And that's evident in his dialogue right there.
Yeah.
Actually, that was pretty plain vanilla stuff for Mike. When he was in front of the microphone, boy,
man,
anything was liable to go down. He's liable to say anything.
I'm impregnable. I mean, it was just a saying, like,
he wasn't lying.
He wasn't lying, man.
He was pregnant.
That's what I'm saying. I didn't, man. All right, Mike.
You couldn't impregnate him?
No, you can't do that, right. Mike, man.
So just a quick overview, right? We highlighted one of his podcasts, Hot Box, and he had Boosie on there. And it was great because what Mike did, and we spoke extensively about this, he is a unique person to be in the space that he's in, where he has some of the most notable tough guys, right?
Yeah.
Gangsters, rappers, street dudes, MMA fighters, NFL players, boxing champions, right? And what he does is he brings them on and they are in such awe and in reverence of his persona.
Yes.
Right? The image of Mike Tyson, that what he then does masterfully is breaks himself down.
Oh, man, so
it is somewhat self-deprecating about himself, and then begins to break down the other person on the seat opposite him, right? And makes them realize that, look, yes, there's some merit to the legend of Mike Tyson, but understand a lot of that is a facade.
Yeah.
And it's not a good place to be. I don't like that person.
Yeah, he's like, I don't like that person.
He doesn't. And he is unabashed about explaining and sharing that and showing you the flaws in that, right? That person had to buy people.
Ugh. You wouldn't want to do what it took for me to get what I got.
Yes.
You know, like the journey there.
Yes. Woo. Right. It's not worth it.
Yeah.
That person, that Iron Mike, was scared for people to know who he really was.
Oh, man.
You can't buy friends. I hide who I am, so I pay people money to like me. I pay for it because I'm insecure. I'm afraid they won't like me if they know who I really am and what I really like to do. It might seem weird to them.
Yeah, man. That part is so good.
Cole, you actually referenced something that actually spoke to what you just said. Mm. You know what? Hold that thought, man. I actually got a clip that'll speak right to it.
My man.
Mike! Don't leave Denver now. Come on.
Maybe God, you know, gave him such a strong body. He figured, well, I'll give him a strong body and I'll make him have to become strong another way on his own. You know what I mean? He's a little weak personality as far as being, he's easily misled. He needs love. He needs a boost. You know, he needs confidence, somebody to be there with him. Look, just relax, Michael. Don't get so tense. Relax. All of this is another parking lot. You've done it already 20 times. You've done it in the gym. With better fighters than you're ever gonna fight here. I mean, it's always hard, but I mean, well, you know, you always should have confidence because it always comes out on your side. You're always better than everyone you get in there with, right? So just relax, don't let your imagination get you. Let's go get ready for a fight, come on.
He doesn't have much experience. He's only got about a dozen fights. He just knows how to fight. He's very quick for a heavyweight. It makes him look like he has more experience than he actually has.
Would you say then he's a natural fighter?
No, I wouldn't say he was a natural. He didn't walk in the gym like that.
Okay, thanks. Another right duck to the body by Tyson.
Very, very strong boxer, Tyson.
Tell you.
Very, very strong.
Brown has taken some vicious punishment and held on. He's
really
still in
has.
There.
I don't think he's...
There's another right by Tyson.
It's just
left right.
He's giving it. Towel's coming in. Look at old Tyson jump on the ropes.
That is it. They threw the towel in.
Threw the towel in. He didn't want to see. He didn't want to see his boxer hurt.
I think the towel hit the canvas about 35 seconds into the fight.
Look at old Tyson. He's rolling on the ground with joy.
I told you I had you.
My man.
I told you I had you.
So for some context, and I got to correct myself, in episode one, I said there was a clip with Mickey Rooney.
Right.
So that actually wasn't Mickey Rooney. For the boxing experts out there, they're like, no, that's Teddy Atlas.
Yes. Yes.
So context. So that was in 1982. Mike was 16 years old,
yes. Man.
And he was fighting Kelton Brown in the Junior Olympics in Denver.
Dude was probably 7 feet, by the way.
Yeah, yeah.
If they can't see it, dude was linked up over him.
And got the worst of it. Imagine they throwing the towel after 35 seconds.
35 seconds, man.
So, my man. So
And dude kicked his mouthpiece.
He did.
I got to say that. The man, once he seen the corner through the tank, kicked the mouthpiece.
Hey, they saved you, bro.
Exactly,
you were,
man,
getting the beating of your
life. Oh, my goodness.
So, more context, right? So, If you remember back at the beginning of the clip, Teddy's like, hey, don't leave Denver.
Yeah.
So this is literally right before the fight. Mm. His hands are bound up, ready to fight, to put the gloves on. He's got the robe on.
Yep.
He's ready. And he's walking outside the stadium.
Ready to go.
Right next to the highway.
Yeah.
He's walking on the highway.
Yeah.
And Teddy's like, whoa, come back here, man.
Don't leave Denver.
He embraces him. And Mike is weeping.
Yeah, man.
Like, yes. He's just broken.
Yeah, man. Right before a fight.
And I don't know if this is a ritual or like he's used to Mike going through these mood swings. Or I don't want to classify it as a mood swing, but this is like, if I'm a trainer, I'm nervous.
Yeah, like we're not ready. I mean, in my mind.
Yes, absolutely. We're walking next to the highway before the bell rings.
Yeah, yeah.
So he embraces him. Says, hey, come on, man. He settles him down. Mike is weeping. They're embracing each other. Mike has literally got his arms around.
And he's rubbing his ribs.
Yeah, Mike's rubbing his ribs. How did you feel about that, actually?
It was just bizarre. I felt like I was invading someone's space watching.
Yes, me too,
it was just like...
Me too.
Like, it was really personal.
Yeah, yes.
And it really was just two men sharing an intimate moment where someone was weak and the other one was picking him up.
Yeah.
And Teddy spoke to that.
He did.
Mike is a little weak mentally.
Mm.
Ooh.
Ouch. Easily swayed, right? Like, could be kind of pushed the wrong way, if possible. And it's interesting. He kind of spoke to, you know, almost what it could, what it ended up being.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Man. So, you know, so Mike literally was outside on the highway, leaving the stadium in his robe. And Teddy calms him down, gets him ready. And within 35 seconds of annihilating this guy, the opponent's ring threw the towel in and Mike won.
Yeah. And if you got to embrace me, rub my ribs,
hey,
and you knock someone out in 35 seconds, let's get it over with, player.
I'm with it.
Go ahead and get it in.
Right? He got deep into it. He spoke about toxic masculinity and the energy that immature and insecure men feed on. Right? He got deep into that too. Really good stuff. And then after we profiled the Oprah episode.
Oh, man. I think on the Oprah episode, what was so amazing was just his willingness to be vulnerable and the humility he showed. We also brought forward that he got a standing ovation. You know, this is a convicted rapist.
Whew.
All women in that show. And they were just overwhelmed with showing love for him on his journey of, in some ways, I would call it redemption, right? Or just continuing to figure out who he is. So, I don't know. I thought the Oprah clip, for me, showed the start of the evolution because that was in 2003.
Yeah.
And obviously, the clips that we've put in front of you as it relates to his Hotbox podcast are in the last, you know, year or less.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And then there's more, like with the caller, just some more insight and amazing first caller in, too, as well.
Yeah. We profiled our first submission for longtime listener, first-time caller. Her name was Steph from Chicagoland, and she brought some really interesting topics to the conversation, right? Spoke about how gender is so tied to masculinity, right? And how hard it was for her to think about this. That was an interesting one for me because, again, I spoke about, like, this was easy for me.
You. Yeah,
I've been thinking about this since the time my uncle smacked me in the back of the head for eating.
You better quit messing around with that food,
for
man.
Not eating like a man as an 11-year-old boy. Since that moment, my goal in life was to be a man and carry myself that way, right?
Yeah.
And so that was really important. Another thing that she did a great job of is to highlight what I think is critical here is to talk about what she wants and what she seeks in this man as a straight white female.
Yes.
Her definition of masculinity is driven by her wants and needs as a woman.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And that was a great point because I think for me, when I think of masculinity, it's who I strive to be.
Yes.
Right. Yes. And I think it's interesting because I am pretty open to allowing people to interpret masculinity for whatever it is that they want it to be.
Absolutely.
This is one of the few areas where I'm not going to argue with you, but I will tell you, if your definition is flawed,
you will.
I will.
Yes.
But I get it, right? That's your perception.
Yeah.
And so that leads us to where we are today.
Yeah, man.
Right? Yes. Well, no, actually, we had Brene Brown.
No, we had Brene. Yeah.
Yes.
Let's not forget her, man.
Like, yes.
You sum it up with just this comment that she made. Vulnerability is how you manage uncertainty, risk, and emotional exposure.
Ooh.
And, you know, what was really interesting about that was the armor shouldn't be rewarded behavior.
Yeah.
You kind of hiding behind and protecting yourself. I'm a fan. Like, I listened to her TED Talk. They got the most views ever.
Yep.
She's just her articulation, like, not weaponizing uncertainty. I would tell you, if you haven't gotten exposure to her, I got exposure to her through you because of your experience and the book. What did you say? Five New York Times bestsellers. And that's only because she spit knowledge.
Yeah, she is really brilliant. Ugh. She went on to
share a couple things, right? She spoke about how she was in front of a platoon of high-functioning military men, and they validated, like, look, there is no courage without vulnerability.
Yeah. Yes.
Right. You have to, in order to be courageous and brave, you have to be vulnerable. And so there is, I think, in my opinion,
yeah,
there is nothing more masculine than being vulnerable.
Yeah.
Because you have to be fearless. And this is what Mike Tyson is.
Got you.
He is fearless. He doesn't care what you think about him.
Mm-hmm.
He's yeah. not ashamed of that person. He's recognizing it and he's stamping out in front of you to say, look, I'm not afraid of that. And no one's going to shame me into that. Because again, remember, the biggest obstacles to vulnerability are fear and shame.
Yeah.
And if you allow those things to drive your thinking, it will prevent you from being vulnerable because you are now afraid of someone else thinking thoughts of you.
You. Got it. Yeah. I get you.
Which is some of the weakest behaviors you can exhibit. Adapting because someone thinks a certain way of you.
Yeah.
And not standing up on your own convictions and merit of your own behavior.
I don't know, man. What I think the good part in that, too, is it takes me back to even Tyson's comment in that where he said, and you did a really good job of, my opinion, breaking this down, but being good is so much more rewarding than being great.
Whew.
And what he was getting at, what you said, what Kojo mentioned in the last episode, great is actually great at this thing that's put in front of people. Like you play a sport or you're in work. He's talking about being a good person internally. And that one really stuck with me as we think of this journey of, to your point, vulnerability.
Right.
So, man, we, and I don't know if there's one more, but I think the big thing too for everyone is, if you didn't get to see the last episode, you got to go check that out.
Yeah, that's
and
good
we,
stuff.
You know, we wanted to make sure we did a summary, but we're jumping right back in and we don't want you missing out on what was communicated before because we might reference some of that, but we didn't want to start it without giving kind of a brief summary of what it was.
Right. And I think there's one other item I want to highlight, and we didn't discuss this, but there is a quote by a gentleman called James Clear. He's an author and entrepreneur. And the quote is, every skill you have was once unknown to you.
Mm.
The human brain is a learning machine. Stick with it.
That's deep.
And the reason why I say that, Brené is very outspoken in expressing the idea that vulnerability is not a personality trait, or it's not only a personality trait.
Mm.
It is actually a skill.
Yeah,
you can develop this. Right. And I speak very candidly about my challenges with it. Right. It's interesting in the most important relationship that I have with my wife. That's the biggest area of challenge.
I know. It's interesting.
That was, and it happens.
And you're vulnerable in that. Right. Like that's really it's so good because I think others I think there's agreement in that. You know, if you really step back to think about it, you say, always say to me, the person that knows you pretty much the most, right?
Yes.
And has the maximum amount of exposure to you.
Yes. And it's interesting because men are probably the most challenged in those situations.
Agreed. I agree.
Because that's our wife. That's our partner.
Yes.
Right. And if there's anyone we can't present weak to, soft is her.
Is her. Yes.
And it's interesting that honestly, I think that's the toxic part of masculinity.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes. Okay,
because again, we are misunderstanding what vulnerable is.
Yeah.
So anyway, I just say that to lead us into our next clip and profile caller number three.
All right.
All right, masculinity. My view of masculinity has changed substantially over the years. You know, getting married will change you. Having kids will as well. One challenge I've encountered is that biblical masculinity is not always congruent with the American dream and what we consider to be manly in this country. I believe masculinity is found in being, you know, secure and grounded, you know, not too high, not too low, to be self-controlled. It's to be strong yet gentle, you know, the defender of your family, but also the cuddler of your little ones. And then finally, masculinity is being a sacrificial servant leader. So blessings to you both. Love what you do. Please keep it up.
Man.
Nice. My man. I like how he went into this one. Caller number three. He used the idea that he's a man of faith.
Faith. Yep.
And that there's multi-dimensions
when
it comes to the biblical definition, mm-hmm. right? Being self-controlled. and being a leader and the cuddler.
Okay.
The cuddler.
Yeah, we'll talk about that. Yeah,
let's talk about it.
Well, right? I guess for me, you know, I actually agree. And it's interesting. We'll bridge into our definitions, right? And I know you'll get to yours first. But like, you know, my mom didn't even cuddle.
Ooh.
And again, I expressed it. I didn't grow up consistently with the man in the house kind of later in my life. And that to me, it's almost like, and I love when my kids come get in the bed and we engage, but there's kind of a time limit, right? It's like 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, the cuddle's over. But I don't know what that is. And I guess if someone else had a different experience, you know, for caller number 3, maybe, but I don't know. It's hard for me to put that down as a masculine trait, but maybe I'll be reformed by the end of this. I doubt it on the cuddling point, but what is your definition? Let's get to this. What is your definition of masculinity?
Well, before we do that, bro, you need to get some therapy.
That's what we're doing right now, man.
That's what we, okay. Because let me tell you, cuddling is without, showing love
is
and
masculine.
Affection
okay.
is without doubt a masculine trait.
Okay.
You bet you have to. Men, listen.
Cuddle.
If you feel a certain type of way about showing physical affection to your children, you are creating a serious deficit in their character. We as men have to lead in that way, and they have to get that from us.
Yeah. I'm not disagreeing with you, but
you just don't see it.
Yeah, because I didn't get cuddled, and I don't. Okay. I guess I'm finding out that I'm a big deficit to the world, but at this point in time, I think what you're saying is it could be a confidence. I can even step back internally and say there could have been confidence challenges that maybe have pushed me to that toxic masculinity that maybe they wouldn't have to deal with negatively if love, compassion is seen as a manly trait. I'm not going to disagree.
Intimacy.
Intimacy.
So it's interesting. So I'll give you an example here and bring it back a bit. So there is a story about these two brothers who grew up in a house, the same household. Two brothers.
Okay.
The father was an abusive alcoholic.
Okay.
Degenerate.
Yeah.
And one of the brothers grew up and followed in his father's footsteps.
Okay.
A drunk, career criminal, reckless behavior, no success in his life whatsoever. And they asked him, hey, why do you think you turned out this way? And he said, I grew up watching my father.
Wow. Okay.
Right.
Yep. Which is kind of the norm, right? We're taught or in our mind, it's like they're going to see the bad and do the bad.
They're going to see what you do, period.
Period.
And
right.
Do it.
Got it.
Right. Whether good or bad.
Hmm.
Then they asked the other brother who overwhelmingly was successful and thrived, had a healthy relationship with his wife and his children, never drank a sip of liquor in his life, alcohol in his life. And they asked him, why do you think you turned out the way you did?
What did he say?
He said, I grew up watching my father.
So they both. So he watched and looked on the other side of that, like, I'm not going to do that.
And so I say that to say, that's to good. Bring it back to your point, right? The kids are going to watch.
God, that's good, man.
I didn't grow up with affection. Like intimacy, that type of life. And neither did you.
No. How did you turn
it? But it's like, I recognize it's a necessity for me.
Okay.
I recognize that that's a deficit in my personality. And I have to provide that to my kids.
In some way, somehow, you've seen positivity in that action perpetuating growth, support.
Yes.
You know, I think for me, maybe as I've come up, I've seen where the parent that was more cuddly was like the kid wasn't ever going to get out of the nest.
Right.
You get what I mean? Like, it's crazy.
Yes, for sure.
Like, and to your point, it's like, I guess I got to get away from being dogmatic about that one experience being the only experience that would translate from that.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Yeah, this is really good for me. I'm going through therapy. This is what I appreciate you for.
All right.
But what is your definition?
So for me, masculinity, there are a number of traits that my definition, you can't be void of if you want to be masculine in my world, right? Yeah. So intelligent.
Yeah. Okay.
Articulate, strong, disciplined, right? Ability to accept and acknowledge being and doing wrong and apologize for it.
Wow.
Right? Those are traits that's probably one type of person that I have very little patience for. The person who can't apologize or acknowledge when they do wrong.
Yeah.
It's just a massive character flaw for me.
Yeah.
And so kindness, and there's a couple other things that fall under kindness. Being empathetic.
Okay.
And considerate. Being thoughtful. Two types of thoughtful, right?
Okay.
The type of thoughtful like, are you okay?
Yeah.
Anything? As well as the second type, which is being thoughtful in taking your time to respond.
Oh.
Being slow to speak and denying yourself the opportunity to act emotionally.
Got it. Yeah, that makes sense.
Like
yeah.
Those people who just, blah, that's as unmasculine as it gets. And it's interesting. There are behaviors, and this is really interesting for me. And this is where some people might say my definition is flawed, right? When you behave in a way that doesn't exemplify masculinity, mm-hmm. such as speaking out of turn.
Okay.
I don't consider that to be effeminate behavior. I just consider it to be unmasculine.
Unmasculine. Okay. Yes. Or a toxic.
Toxic. Yes. Right. Yes. And toxic masculinity is not feminine behavior. It's just toxic masculinity.
Okay.
Okay. And so I think that's important to delineate here. Then we talk about being brave.
Okay.
Being brave is a massive part of it. Speaking truth to power. I love people who do that. I have a big affinity for historical figures who have been outspoken, have led revolutions, and speaking truth to power.
Yeah.
That's one of the more masculine things anybody can do. Courageous.
Yeah.
And of course, my favorite is vulnerable.
Yeah. Cole, when I look at that poster of words, we could draw you out. And I know, and it's funny, I've actually seen you exhibit that. I think in some ways, and everything's a work in progress.
Right.
It's funny because I don't look at those and say, oh man, like, hope you get there. I've actually seen you act that out. Maybe let me talk to my people. I know I need therapy, but I assume there's several people, listeners, that might need therapy as well. So I'm going to talk to my people, if you don't mind, because I'm going to cross over my definition.
You broken people, pay attention. You're about to speak to his crowd.
So broken people, here's the deal. I will speak to my crowd. And guess what? Guess what my crowd's all about? My crowd's all about facts.
All right, educate me, Dan. How about that?
Factually, the word masculine, at the same time as the word feminine, was put into existence in the Latin language around the 14th century. So with that being said, when they finally put it into existence, and I know you're going with me here, you're just loving this. It was all about the physical trait. A male, the sex of a male is masculine, and the sex of a female is feminine. And those two words actually came together and were put at the same time. So maybe my jaded view, and let's be frank, it started out as an adjective in the 14th century.
Mm-hmm.
In some ways, when we got to the 1600s, it became a noun. And now, to what we're talking about, it's back to an adjective because it's actually describing a person, place, potentially, and a thing. I'm just stuck on the fact that it's being manly is masculine, being powerful, strong is being masculine. And then on the feminine side, for me, some form of sensitivity, which kind of ties to where it tied back when the word was originally put in the Latin language at its origin, was tying to kind of the mothering type of character trait for someone that's feminine. As simplistic as it can be, I just see them on opposite ends of the spectrum. That's just how I'm looking at it. All right, Cole, I do have to bring in the point of, you know, my history at a young age learning a different language or linguistics. So the terminology of grammatical gender classifications, and that gender classification being masculine and feminine.
Right.
So I'll use German for an example. There's descriptors going into the noun that will differentiate it being masculine and feminine.
Right. Okay.
You know what I mean? So with that, it also could delineate female or masculine behaviors.
Okay. Give me what's an example of a male behavior?
Okay. So working. So I'll use in German terms, work. Work is looked at. We even heard, you know, and we'll hear this on this episode, sweat of your brow. That's looked at as a masculine behavior. A building, a physical building. Think of a building that's formally built. They look at that as a man potentially hard work, that being done by a man, that's actually going to bridge a descriptor that is masculine going into that as well. So I have to step back a little and say, wait a second. Even learning a different language created this binary view for me and almost black and white view of masculine and feminine. I don't know any other way to put it. And I mean, maybe you can help me with an example of that, because as I think of even how I was raised, I don't know, my viewpoint has been the tough, the one that doesn't take stuff from anybody. Like, that's what I've seen as masculine. And that's just the truth. I know there's what people want, but I'm just telling you what I've seen and kind of what I've looked to is masculine, if you ask me that.
So that's really good. And that provides a ton of context, right? And, you know, we argued in one of the early episodes about changing the definition of a word.
We did.
I'm a little fluid when I'm open to changing definition. But I will say this. So a lot of my definition of masculinity has come from obviously watching my father.
Okay. Yes.
Right. And fathers, pay attention. We spoke about this earlier. Kids are watching you and observing your behavior, whether you want them to or not.
Yeah, that's so good, man.
And you know, there's a really interesting, I'm going to get back on topic in a minute. LeBron James spoke about this, and it was really interesting, his take on it. He was in an interview, and the interviewer asked him about the lack of his father in his life and what impact that had on him.
Yes.
And LeBron said something interesting. He said, for a man who could not be in my life at all, for that type of person, I'm really glad that he wasn't in my life. Because the person who could do that, be absent from a child's life, it's the entirety of a child's life, that person being present would have probably done more damage to me than good.
Wow, that's deep, man. I mean, that's
It's just a great perspective. And it has me appreciate the impact my father had in my life and some of the really important things that I learned just watching him. The discipline part, the strength, the intelligence, the articulation, the kindness. As tough and big and revered as my father was, he always extended grace to people, even when they didn't deserve it. And that's what grace is.
That's good, man.
Right? And so that shaped a certain behavior. But you're trying to understand how my definition can coexist with my definition of masculine and feminine.
Yes.
And I'll give you a perfect example, and I hope she doesn't get too upset with me. So my wife is a physician, beautiful woman.
Yep.
A lady.
Yep.
Quintessential lady, yep. Right? She carries herself in a feminine way and is, in every sense of the word, a feminine woman. But what I will tell you is she has masculine traits.
Yeah, okay.
I can call my wife. She'll be at work. I'll be at work. I can call her and have a 30-second conversation where I ask her a question and she gives me the specifics.
Okay.
She is.
Right.
There's no filibuster. There's no great. She gets right to the point and we can end that conversation and go about our ways.
I would view that as a masculine trait.
Yes. Right.
Let's get to the point.
Let me tell you, she's probably one of the most driven, focused people I've ever met. That is a masculine trait. But she's still the most feminine woman I know.
Got it. Okay.
My mother is very similar. And I guess there is a Freudian piece of that, right? Where she is very gracious and ladylike, but she is a warrior.
Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, and it all makes sense.
Right? Like, these are feminine women with masculine traits. And it just so happens, and I think there's something to that, right? Where you pick a mate similar to your parent.
Yeah.
There's something in there, because that just isn't a coincidence. I've seen that repeated multiple times. That being good and bad.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I know where you're going. Yeah.
Right? So I think that hopefully that gives you a little bit more context to come up with. I spoke in the last episode about how I don't believe that the opposite of masculine is feminine.
Well, can I have an interview question for you?
Okay.
So is it more accepted for a woman to have a masculine trait or for a man to have a feminine trait?
We're going
to
talk about this in a little bit, but I will tell you this. I will tell you this. Manhood is revered on a level that can't be touched. Masculinity and manhood is here. Look, simple example. Women can wear traditionally men's clothing. And it's deemed nothing.
Yeah. Man, that's cool.
Have a man wear a woman's attire.
Yep. You're right.
Look at the heads that will turn. Have a woman behave in a masculine, strong, outspoken way. It will be looked upon differently, but have a man behave in a feminine way, which is overly emotional. I'm talking about traditionally here. Overly emotional and overly effeminate. Watch the looks that that person
gets. So in some ways, I think caller two had mentioned that in the previous episode, but that's somewhat of a double standard.
It absolutely is. It absolutely. The things that men do that are celebrated, women aren't allowed to do. Mm. They are demonized for it.
Yeah.
Let's be honest here. There is absolutely a double standard there, which needs to be addressed. But I like what our caller number four had to say. Let's listen to him and we can get into some more dialogue.
The statement around what's manhood to me. So I'm a God-fearing man. I am a Bible-believing man. So I'll start there. But I think either single or married, a man is able to control his emotions and passions. I think he doesn't abuse women or children. I think he treats all people with love, respect, and dignity. I think he provides for his family, that he gets out and earns some living by the sweat of his brow, whether that be in an office, on a court, on a field, or in a construction site, regardless of where it is, that's what he does. I think he protects his family. I think protection and putting his life on the line is extremely important to that.
Caller number four.
Yeah, he brought it.
He did, too.
He brought it, man. He had biblical, man of faith. He had several points, man.
He did. Very key points that I think I...
And he had some of my physical traits, the physicality of masculinity.
Yes, and that's something that's really interesting. There are so many submissions, and I listened to the different... What do you think the biggest difference is between the male definition of masculinity and the female definition? Just high level. What were the biggest differences
for you? Yeah, the biggest differences for me was what the female, the one female listener, wanted.
Now, I'm talking about all of them.
Out of all of them. Oh, yes, man.
Like the general themes.
There's a softness. There's a caring. There's like the empathetic, the emotional intelligence side of it.
Yes.
I think it's a feeling. It's a,
yes.
It's an engagement, like almost an act of service versus in the middle. It was clearly, to me,
physical.
The physical.
They were verbs. They were doing things.
Action, right? Yes. A verb, like you're saying.
Like actually, he spoke about laborers picking things up.
He did, yeah.
Right? Protecting. Like, that's an act, protecting his family. They were all things that required action.
Yeah.
And the women were speaking about soft skills that are not tangible.
Yeah. No, right? You're right. You're right. Actually, you can't grab it.
Right. They were speaking about the soft skills where someone was exhibiting a character trait, a personality, a feeling, right? Which was really, that was consistent throughout.
Yeah.
But let's get back on topic. This guy, caller number four, spoke about controlling your emotions.
Mm-hmm.
It's a critical part of being masculine, right? You've got to understand, look, again, some people might say that's a feminine thing when you don't control your emotions.
Yeah.
And I get that. But I think that's an unmasculine trait, too.
Oh, I got you. Yes, yes.
Some things fall into both categories, but this without that. And I say unmasculine, I think exemplifies toxic masculinity.
Yeah, yes.
Right? And then the Bible believe in man. And I think this is really good because ultimately my ideal as a Christian man, my ideal of the perfect example of masculinity is Jesus.
Here we go, man. You're pulling it in, bro.
I'm serious.
And I'm not saying that in a bad way.
No.
I'm just saying, well, now that you've come to this point in saying Jesus is kind of the best example of that, I can understand, too. It's now not about just male versus female. Does that make sense? I think I'm going in with you a little deeper because now I'm thinking of, you know, just me being a man of faith. from that standpoint, now, even you just saying that, I kind of look at it a little bit different.
Right. Like, think about that. And, you know, people have this perception of men in the Bible is soft and Christian men are soft. Think about the men in the Bible.
Yeah, no.
I think about Peter. So Peter is one of my favorite people in the Bible. And I think, and his relationship with Jesus was one of my favorite. You think about the dynamic. I imagine Peter was literally on Jesus' right hip everywhere he went.
Yeah, like every time.
Because anything big happened, Peter was the first one to say something.
Right, right.
Right? He always was wanted to show Jesus he was down. Like when Jesus was walking on the water, Peter was the one who, he's the first one to get out of the boat.
He jumped off the boat, dog.
And he was walking for a second and then saw the wind and got nervous and then went under, right?
right.
He was just, he just wanted Jesus to know he was his guy.
Yeah, it wasn't always a fun situation.
No, for Peter, well, think about, so they walked on water. Oh, the time when they were, Jesus was talking about
that's going to Jerusalem. That's what I'm talking
about. Yeah, he was going to Jerusalem and Jesus was talking about how, what was going to happen when they got to Jerusalem. And Peter was like, no, Jesus, that's not going to happen. I've got you. I got your back.
What did Jesus say?
He said, Satan, get behind me.
This dude, Peter, talking about me? I'm Satan?
Peter, that's his guy. Yeah, Jesus, he didn't cut corners at all. He was keeping it 100 all the time.
Man, talking about get behind me,
yeah,
Satan.
Yeah, that was his guy. And then so my favorite is in the Garden of Gethsemane.
Oh, yeah, right? Yeah.
So Judas Iscariot has sold Jesus out.
Yeah,
for a bag of silver coins, gold coins, I don't know what. And he comes and kisses Jesus on the cheek to show the Roman soldiers who Jesus was.
Yes, who he is.
And then Jesus, he's leaving, and the soldiers come and grab Jesus, rough him up.
What did Peter do, though? Peter
went to his hip. He pulled that blade out and cut the dudes with the soldier's ear off. Jesus was like, yo, chill.
Put the ear, what did Jesus do?
Pick the ear up and put it back on. I got it, though. You don't need... And Peter, by the way, who is Peter? You are, first of all, you have acknowledged that Jesus is the Son of God.
Yeah, yeah.
He can summon a legion of angels to come down and do whatever to these measly soldiers, right?
You know what Peter is, though? Peter's like, I know you got them people that you know, but you know what I know?
What?
In 2020, I got heat. he had it on him like he wasn't tripping.
So the fact that you're rolling with Jesus... And you've got heat on you? Like, he wanted to show Jesus he was down much.
You're right.
Like, what do you do for someone who's the Son of God? Like, he left all his worldly possessions behind and he's following him. And he wants to show Jesus, I will do whatever it takes.
Yeah, to someone that doesn't need anything.
He doesn't need anything. So he just wants to show, like, I'm down for whatever. And I'm gonna use this sword. I'm gonna do something active. And slice. I'm going to hurt someone else just to show how down I am for you.
Yeah, but I think too, though, that's why Jesus told Peter to Satan get behind me, though, because he knew Peter was crazy.
Man,
Peter was down
for Jesus. That's all I know.
Yeah.
Who else? Who else was there? Like Saul?
Saul, yeah.
You know what he did for a living before he followed? Like, he killed Christians.
Yes, he did. His name was changed to Paul.
Right?
Yes, he got out. Yes.
David? He killed the giant, man.
Yeah.
Goliath. Solomon. There are people in the Bible who can be recognized historically as masculine men. And I think Jesus represents more of what I was talking about. Mm,
I got you now.
He wasn't scared to correct people.
Yeah.
Speak truth to power. Right? And he also understood when to extend grace and mercy and be kind.
Yeah.
And that makes sense, man. It does. And that takes us into a whole nother conversation. This is where I think it's really good. And what we can do is get your Bibles out, folks.
Going
to go to Ephesians 5:25.
Here we go.
Ephesians 5:25. So, husbands, love your wives just as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her. Okay? That's 5:25.
Yeah.
Then Ephesians 5:33. However, each one of you must love your wife as he loves himself, and the wife must respect the husband. Okay. So, husbands, love your wives. Wives, respect your husband.
Okay.
Hold those two thoughts.
Okay.
Husbands, love your wives.
Yep. Wives, respect your husband.
Okay. Then we're going to go to a famous playwright and novelist named Margaret Atwood.
Okay.
Margaret Atwood is a Canadian poet and novelist, literary critic, and essayist, and she is best known for her most recent work, which was...
What is it?
Handmaid's Tale.
Oh, and am I feminine for saying that's one of my favorite shows?
Absolutely not. It's a hell of a show. No, crazy story, man. And interesting adaptation on what could happen in the future, right? All right?
Yeah.
It really in a parallel universe. So interesting.
Actually, I'm talking about parallel universe. No. Listen, so Margaret Atwood wrote that book in 1987.
Mm.
And when she wrote it, she documented that everything that's happening in that book has happened at one point or another throughout mankind's history.
Oh,
so okay. It seems so abstract and wild and like nothing that could ever really happen. No, it's happened. And it seems like a stretch that it could happen today, but I'm not going to say one way or another. But I will say this. We human beings are capable of that, and they've done it before. Anyway, she has a quote that's referenced by a number of people, and it's really interesting in the secular world. And the quote goes this: men are afraid that women will laugh at them.
Hmm.
Women are afraid that men will kill them.
This is deeper than just that, right? So how does that tie to
So come back, right?
I'm supposed to give respect.
God Almighty is recognizing the difference between men and women. And he has said, men, love your wives. Women, respect your husbands.
So now
let's go to the secular world and look what Margaret has to say. She is saying men are scared that women will laugh at them.
So that's disrespectful.
Disrespect. And now look on the other end of the spectrum. Women are afraid that men will kill them. So look at how far those two are apart. Now the men, the ego is so critical.
So he told us we got an ego?
Hey.
Wow.
So the ego is the path to the male's primary love language. Like that's what speaks to us, right? That's how we understand love is if you speak to our ego.
Yeah.
Instead of loving your husband, show him respect because his ego is that important to him.
Yeah, I mean, at times he'd rather respect even over being loved.
Yes, and look, the biggest fear for men is that a woman's going to laugh. Listen, I spoke about this earlier. The most protected ideal
that's so good, man.
Is the male ego.
This is deep.
You can't. That's why masculine. Look, men have put themselves in compromising positions because someone's challenged their manhood.
Yeah, and don't do that where the family's involved.
Oh, listen.
You're going to be out of character.
Men will make unnatural motions because you have challenged their manhood in front of their woman.
It's the truth.
Men, don't ever. Listen, if you want to start something physical with someone, say something belittling or challenge a man's manhood in front of his woman.
Mm, yeah. Ooh. We got a problem.
We're going to the hands.
Yeah.
Period. That's how fragile the male psyche is and the male ego is.
And depending on what side you're on, it might not end the way you want it to.
Listen, I've seen some bad things happen, man, because that's how valuable it is to men.
Damn.
And that leads me into another piece. And I think we need to talk about that. I spoke about toxic masculinity.
Yes.
And the traits that are unmasked.
Yeah, what do you see as that? We probably need to narrow that in more specifically.
Yes, because again, I don't believe the opposite of masculinity is feminine.
Yeah, right? Feminine.
But there are opposing traits that are unmasculine, right?
Okay.
And so, unempathetic.
Got it.
People who can't see outside of themselves and empathize with someone else.
Mm.
Feel their pain and get their perspective.
Yeah.
Unmasculine. People who are inconsiderate of feelings or things that impact others.
That's so good, man.
You can't see where they're coming from. You're just going to say anything.
Yeah.
You're just going to do whatever, disregarding the impact of other people. Like, come on.
Yeah.
All right, we spoke about loud and overly aggressive in situations that don't require any aggression.
That's such a poor personality and character trait. And those examples, listen, man, just don't do it, man. Anyone. A situation doesn't require it. And again, I've been on the end of the spectrum where I felt like I've had to forego my humanity in certain situations because people in power are being overly aggressive.
What I want to talk to here is maybe I'll go to a term code switching a little bit. It's funny, like all of what you're saying in the workplace couldn't agree more. There's this dynamic, and I know there's people that are listening right now that are struggling with that when they get home. And I would be lying if I didn't say that's been a journey for me to, in some ways, kind of let your guard down, have the armor on at home. And then because work is the place where you're kind of providing for your family, I've inherently built some of those. And, you know, I'm on this journey of being a 360 leader, 360 person. But man, just you saying that to me, I'm like, if I put my work hat on, there's no way, shape, fashion, or form I would do any of those things you said. But I know moments in time when I'm not at work that I'm exhibiting toxic masculinity behaviors.
Yes.
Goodness gracious, man.
So that's really good, Ted. But I'd like, you mentioned something. I'd like to get a little bit more context around the term 360 leader and 360 person. There are people, you've been executive for years now, right? And so that's been a mode of operation for you. Can you expand upon that for us?
Yeah. So I'll go into 360 leader first, which is usually bridges to a survey done at work where you get 360 feedback. And when you think about that, like think of it in like almost a cross. Access. The top of it. Yeah. People are above you giving you feedback. You have the people that work for you giving you feedback. And then you have your peers. They get to see you operate as from a business standpoint. So when you think about being a 360 person, though, what, you know, I've been dealing with or challenged with is how am I just as empathetic, just as supportive at home as I am at work when actually the table stakes are me earning a living? And at times I think I'm going to be maybe more lazy at home and not maybe generate the same level of intensity and effort that I'm giving at work. And unfortunately, you know, I've heard that, you know, people like, you know, are you in work mode or are you in home mode? Right. So that's what I'm, you know, dealing with and being challenged with right now. And for everyone else, you don't really get to turn it off.
Well, and you know, what's interesting is the whole part of 360 leader is that you're willing to accept feedback from the people above you.
That's good. Yes.
Beside you and below you. Right?
Yes.
At home, are you willing to do that?
So there you go. Peel off the Band-Aid. I've not been the best at that.
Wow.
You guys are welcome for this therapy session that we're having.
Right. Couple other things. Disrespectful people.
Yeah, okay.
People who believe that they don't have to answer to no one.
Ooh, that's a tough one.
No, it's not.
You don't
it's
think not. So?
We all are accountable to someone. We all are.
Yeah.
I don't care who you are. Stop that. People do that with this bravado, like, I'm the man. I'm going to answer. Oh, okay. Step outside those doors and do what you think you want and see how that works for you.
Yeah, I just see too many times where people don't understand that until they're buckled or they literally are in a really bad situation, right?
Yes.
I get what you're saying. I wouldn't disagree that it's doable and that they should, but it just seems like it's more hard than not for some.
Yes.
I can't say that's one of the ones I struggle with because I feel on my journey up, I'm one that wants to make others feel good.
Oh, yeah. No,
but I will tell you, I've seen so many people, Bootsy, right? Like Mike Tyson was hitting them up like, actually, who are you?
Ooh, to talk about someone else's kids and how they should raise them.
Man, come on.
That's really good. Ungraciousness.
People are ungracious. I like that. Wow. Okay. Right?
And then the people who ask no questions and take no prisoners. Like, really?
He said, really?
Tyson spoke about this in that initial clip where he spoke about toxic masculinity and what it meant. He said the toxic energy that guys who are immature and insecure feed on.
Okay.
Toxic masculinity. And there's a difference between immature and insecure. And immaturity is when we do things that we probably shouldn't because of lack of knowledge and experience.
Okay.
Right? That's unmasculine. Yes. A child does
yes.
that.
Yes.
He's not grown enough. He's not mature enough.
To get to that point.
Right.
I got
to
you.
Understand the impact of that. Insecurity in someone who just doesn't know. They know what is right and wrong.
Yeah.
But they lack the ability, the strength, and the fortitude to say yes or no.
Man. Jeez, just the difference like insecurity versus insecurity.
Because someone who's immature, they're just not grown in the world. They haven't experienced enough. They don't have the wherewithal to be able to behave. But someone who's insecure, they know.
That's good. But they know better.
Fight it. The hard no versus the easy yes. The cadet. Can you
speak
to that?
Yeah. So when you talk about the cadet prayer, you know, part of it is help me make the hard right.
Yes.
Instead of the easy wrong, and never be content with the half truth when the whole can be one. Actually, the rest of that actually talks about what you're saying because you know once you know the truth.
Right.
Man, that one's good. Man, that's a nugget for the listeners out there. That insecurity versus immaturity, that's a nugget in itself. Because what you're saying is immature is I haven't evolved and I haven't grown and developed to the point of what maybe in this moment would allow me to exercise and exhibit healthy behaviors.
Yeah.
But insecurity, you know better and you're just deciding and making a choice to not engage. Wow. That's good, man. That's a good nugget, Co.
And then I think finally is and a bit that Mike spoke to, right? He spoke about them killers in the streets, them tough guys.
Yeah.
We want people to feel about us the same way we feel about them. That's part of insecurity. That's okay. Being afraid, I get it. Everyone is scared.
Yeah.
Let's move beyond that, right? Let's grow outside of ourselves. Really good stuff. We profiled the male ego and talked about the recognition and attention that it requires, right? And how fragile and highly protected it is.
Yes.
The secular world recognizes it as well as biblical circles, right? And so really good stuff. I think a couple of things that we learned, too, is when we asked, name three people that you think are masculine. And there were some names that were repeat offenders here that people feel pretty strong about.
Yeah. So, obviously, Barack Obama was a big consistently. Denzel popped up. Oh, for sure.
For people of color.
Denzel is,
was in every limit. Single person of color. It was crazy.
One that surprised me a little bit, but I think it didn't surprise you, was The Rock.
No.
Yes. You know what I mean? But part of that might be, I think you had talked to somebody and they said their man has to be able to
pick him up. If that man, Jason Momoa, who is my man, Khal Drogo.
Yeah.
Right? And The Rock. She was like, it's a straight female. She said, I need my man to be able to pick me up.
Yeah, but it matters what you're working with, man. Like, I'm saying that in all joking, but that's relative, brother. And what I mean by that is everybody ain't got the stature to be a, so don't be judging.
I'm sorry, listeners. Please forgive my co-host.
I don't want to be.
You just doing it. You just said it out loud on air. And this will go on the streets.
I'm just for real. Not playing. But no, it's interesting on those. I mean, there were several that were said, but LeBron.
Barack, LeBron, The Rock, and Denzel were probably 80% of people's submissions.
Yes.
And it's interesting because there is something that historically, if you think about the people in your definition,
Let you name them because I named the others and I'll give some added context with them too.
So Dirty Harry.
Oh, Clint my Eastwood. Goodness. Any which way but left, man. What?
He was no prisoner.
He had the orangutan involved in the situation and knocking people out. Come on, man.
John Wayne.
Oh, brother. Riding into the town and all the criminals was jumping out the windows because he was going to have his way with the guns, with the six shooter.
Yep.
Come on, man.
007. Suave, ladies' man.
Man with the car?
What?
And he always had the lady? You know what I mean?
Right. That's historically.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then finally, the infamous Humphrey Bogart.
Ooh.
Mr. Casablanca himself. Yo, let me tell you about that. And by just so we're clear, those last four names we mentioned, those are the historically
Toxic,
yes. Absolutely.
Masculine Absolutely. Examples.
Yes.
And Humphrey Bogart exhibited this more so than anyone. I watched a movie with him once, and the woman said something, and he just backhanded. I was like, yo.
He was doing that on the tube, dog. We couldn't watch it in my house.
Really?
Yeah, like I think there's one time we were watching something, my grandma, because, you know, I'm raised by women. It's like, you better not touch a woman. Ooh. We had to turn him off, man. And that wasn't to your point. It happened. It seemed like that was what he was scripted for.
Yeah, he was. That was a man. He had a cigarette, a whiskey, and a backhand ready for any woman who came crazy talking to him. Anything other than, you're going to do as I say.
And outside of that, anybody will have their way with that little guy. You know what I mean? Like, why are you on TV talking about? Yeah, he was tripping.
He was.
He's toxic. Oh. He's toxic of the toxic, man.
Absolutely.
Putting hands on
women. So it's interesting, right? The diversity in the submissions. Yeah. Jay-Z, David Banner, Killer Mike, Winston Churchill, Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Donald Trump was in there. And then we only had one submission for a woman.
Yeah, who was it?
Rachel Maddow.
Yes. One submission.
Just one submission. Like, out of the dozens and dozens of names that we got, Rachel Maddow was the only female.
Yeah, interesting.
Right?
Yeah.
And so that is something to take into account for all these submissions.
Well, and Cole, what we want to do, and this is what I'll say, is we've been vulnerable. I feel like I've been vulnerable in even my position on masculinity and kind of the evolution there. But we have, I think, three more submissions that we want to kind of just run the gamut on so you guys can hear it. And then you guys know what we always do. We always jump into some form of a path to resolution to have some discussion on it. So let's jump into our last three and we'll do them back to back, man. Yep. So we can get caller 4, 5, and 6 on the air.
Yeah, these were submissions that we felt like we had to put in. There were so many others and we wanted to give as many people opportunity to hear you all's voices. And these were the final three that we picked out of the bunch.
Yeah.
Hello, Kojo and Cedric of the Debut Podcast. Thank you for letting me give you my take on masculinity. I think that it encompasses a few different things, and this definition might change depending on what day you ask me. But today, I think that a lot of it is confidence without ego. And what that means is you can understand your strengths and weaknesses and know what you're good at and feel good about it without having to put someone else down. Also, a strong sense of self. You know who you are, you know what you stand for, and again, without putting down what other people stand for. Security in your masculinity, not being afraid to try different things or take on roles that aren't traditionally masculine because you think it makes you lesser in some way. A big one is a sense of responsibility. Taking care of your loved ones, the people around you, just being the kind of person who takes care of things.
What masculinity means to me is a hardworking man that cares for and provides for his family, is loving, caring, understanding, and patient. He is strong not only physically but mentally, although he is compassionate when he needs to be.
Defining masculinity, I define my masculinity by being a father, a son, a grandson, hopefully someday a grandfather, using all of the privilege and position that I have from being a male to protect those who are weaker and to be a voice for the silent.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was some really good stuff. I really like that. The first young lady had some really good ones, though all of them they did. Yeah. But confidence without ego. Secure within, strong sense of self. Don't put others down to make yourself feel better.
Feel better, yeah. That was good.
The call after that, provider, physically, strong physically and mentally, loving and caring. And the last gentleman said, using all of his privilege and his position afforded to him as a man to be a voice for the weaker.
Yeah, and when I look at all of those, it's, you're not going to take advantage of a situation to get yourself ahead. Mm-hmm. It's to either help someone lesser,
right,
physical presence in there. But this is really, man, you know what, man? Like, we got to say this, because it's pretty hard because of all of the submissions that we got to even narrow it down to these.
Yeah. So thank you all again. Again, there's a clear delineation between what women how they define masculinity versus how men do.
I think you had the first one right. It's what they want.
It is. Yeah. And we spoke to that. Yeah. Right. Yeah. And so really good stuff. Thank you all.
What I would say is I think there's been evolution for me. So I can admit that there's some forms of my thought process on what I originally thought masculinity was. Was more towards that toxic masculinity. And you gave some really great framework or definitions. And I've been even able to see that I've been able to separate kind of the church and state or work and home in that. But one thing I want to throw out as it relates to that, because it's this polarizing piece, right? There's masculinity and then there's this top part of it that's toxic masculinity. I think this actually bridges to, you know, what we've been doing in our earlier episodes on race and racism. Is it all or nothing? We've talked about being, if you're not anti-racist, there's an opportunity where we got to say, right at this point, you're racist. So I'm trying to figure out too, is how can you bridge this relation of masculinity and also tie this into maybe how we look at white racism, kind of the challenge that we have in America right now.
Yeah. So it's interesting because there are without doubt parallels there. And I think this is important for white people to listen to and men to listen to, because there is a belief and a perception that whiteness and men are under attack. I view it a little differently. I see the two most prized possessions / ideals in Western society being masculinity, men, and whiteness.
Yes.
Those are the most prized ideals. And what is under attack is not whiteness and masculinity. White supremacy and toxic masculinity are the things that are under attack, and rightly so.
And I love that you're making that point because, you know, to our white colleagues, friends, white listeners out there, white is good as we're trying to get you exposure and educated. But white supremacy is absolutely unacceptable and there's no place for it.
No.
And I think where we're getting now is, you know, and I'll continue some more therapy sessions. Masculinity in its truest sense, and even hearing what our female listeners communicated, which are more, in my opinion, adjectives, and then we heard some of the verbs in action that men talked about, but there's no place for toxic masculinity.
None.
Man.
None.
And we that's
went,
so good.
And we went through the litany of things that define toxic masculinity: unempathetic behavior, inconsiderate of other people's feelings and impact of your behavior and your words, being obnoxious and loud, overly aggressive in situations that don't require aggression, being disrespectful, ungracious, asking no questions and taking no prisoners, and believing that you don't have to answer to anyone.
Yeah.
Right? That's behavior of insecure and immature men.
And can we also say from a white supremacy standpoint, that's insecure behavior as well? Because you know
better. Absolutely.
That's exactly what we've been talking about.
Absolutely. Yes. Totally agree.
That's so good, man.
I think it's important for us to highlight that and make sure that people have an understanding of what we're speaking about here and get away from that.
So good, Cole.
Right? I am a big man and I have no qualms in trying to exhibit the behaviors that I spoke about as being masculine.
Yeah.
And vulnerability is right up the top of that list.
And I'm with you now, man. When I think of, obviously, Jesus, that was mentioned as well. And I'm thinking about what I want my children to exhibit. You know what? This whole taking a chance of being challenging on something or having to address that. I do agree with you that vulnerability is probably the truest form of masculinity.
It is. Actually. It's the most fearless thing you can do.
Yeah.
Is present yourself as being fearless and willing to share yourself in that way. Yeah. It is. It's undoubtedly. And it's interesting. So many women say that that is a massive part of their desire for their partner.
Interesting. Wow.
So
I want to say this because we're going to have a pretty unique outro, and I think it's only appropriate because
when we think
of being able to engage into this transformation and evolution of Mike Tyson, I can honestly say he's my favorite. He's like one of my favorites right now. I can listen to him for hours on hours on hours. Yeah. If you guys haven't checked out the Hot Box podcast, and we're not getting nothing for repping this, I'm just saying there are so many nuggets that I've gotten, and it's just great to see someone of his stature find out who he is and then really help other people and get there.
Be comfortable with it. Well, before we play that clip, I just want to thank everyone, all the listeners who submitted. Please, please don't be discouraged because you didn't make it on the air. We still have a ton of submissions for
questions.
State your questions, state your position.
And we got time. Still submit it, please.
Hey, you know what? Please, if there's anything we've said in the course of these last two episodes or anything we said over the course of this season one, as we come towards the end of that, please state your position. Follow the instructions, right? You can send your submission to...
man, info@thedebut.com. info@thedebut.com. Boom. And you know what? We've opened up Pandora's box and I'm excited about it.
Yeah.
Because you know what's really cool? For those that will hear themselves... there's more to come on this, and I think this will be a future staple of what we do because the listener interaction is where it's at. We got some really smart and engaging people out there. Hold us to the fire on what we said, but at the same time, add value to the debut podcast because it's something that you're investing your time in, right? Yeah. So it's been fun, man, Cole, and I do want to appreciate you because we've been on this journey with this masculinity. It's funny for you to be all like, man, I can answer this that quick, like, man, I aspire to engage in there. Just try to understand that more, even for myself and more so for my kids to come up, man. It's going to be the most important.
And that's what
part.
It's all about, right?
Absolutely.
Man, this was good, man. Good session. Thank you. I appreciate us getting through this. And again, submit your positions to us. We're coming towards the end of season one.
Yeah.
And we are really thrilled and excited about season two. We got some good stuff lined up for
you. Heavy hitters, man.
So thank you all and enjoy the outro.
I wanted to hit him in the nose one more time so that bone could went up in his brain. I wanted to go up in his brain. Because I always thought about that punch. I always watched, listen to the doctors on television, and that's my friends, and they say when the nose goes in the brain, the consequences of him getting up right away is out of the question.